Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Bench Units. We are coming to you with our Champions Cup autopsy for the however many years in a row. And joining me to help break it down is zero-time Champions Cup winner, James. How's it going, man?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Zero time actual Champions Cup in its true format participant, James McSorley. I don't even make it most of the time. Do you get to say you play Champions Cup if you were in one of those like eight team weird ones with like what was that German team that folded a while ago that
Rather.
yeah, like do you get to say if you were like if I played in that one, do you get to say you play Champions Cup? Is that
Well, if I was feeling malicious, I would say that one having Radon and Porto Torres in it means it kind of automatically doesn't count. But also, Porto Torres have legitimately made the final eight for Champions Cup the last 2 years in a row. So they've made it like three times in the last 5 years, arbitrarily or otherwise. So I'm inclined to say it counts.
Yeah,
Also,
Radon and Porto Torres sounds like the like participants of the third Champions Cup group every year. Porto Torres and a team that's folded. A team that I've
But
heard's folded 10 times that hasn't, and then a team that has folded.
the year you guys went there with Gran Canaria, you nearly beat Llandeil, didn't you? Who then went on to win it that year. So I think whether you were there fairly or otherwise, I think you gave a good enough account of yourselves that it counts for something.
Yeah, I remember playing like 2 minutes at the end of that game. For some reason, I remember
Rose fell down.
yes, I remember I don't even think she fouled out. I think she got chin. I don't remember. But I just remember Sagar going to the free throw line. I think he just beat Mendel on a press. Like he just beat him 1-on-1, but it's not on a video, so no one will ever know except because we said it. But yeah. I
Okay.
love how I'm just
Shout
like,
out.
hey Mendel. You're just getting one straight away, but this is entirely speculative because I don't remember. I went back to the weird COVID 18 Champions Cup with Bilbao the year after, if I'm not mistaken, and
Oh yeah,
also
you.
didn't do well, but
No, that one counts less because I think you guys got panned there. Didn't Ramone
yeah.
have like 40 points against you in one of those games?
What, sorry?
Didn't Ramone have like 40 points against you guys in one of those games?
Yeah, I think it was 40, or maybe it was 37, because in my mind I remember him shooting a three when the clock was running out 4:40, and that's one of the only times that taking a shot at the end of a possession, I'm like, yeah, like at the very end of a game instead of dribbling it out, that's one of the times where I'm like, all right, yeah, fair enough. I respect it. Like if it's, hey, if I make this three, I can get it to a round number. Like if someone had 98 in a game and they were going to dribble it out, but they just took a layup, I'd be like, all right, cool. We probably shouldn't have let you have 98. Like, is that does that align with your opinion on people being annoyed about not dribbling stuff out? Where you're like, yeah, I get the rule, but also don't get wasted.
I hesitate to get too deep into this because I think it ultimately leads to the question, what in the hell is everybody's fascination with round numbers? like four.
Considering numbers don't exist, like.
Yeah, but 40 is great. Why is it better than 41? Like just
It
as
isn't. It's better than 39.
speaking of not round numbers, shall we talk about Champions Cup 2024?
Yes, and fair play to anyone who figured out how to do the 2024 New Year's glasses this year. You'll have a bit of an easier time next New Year's. All right, so let's go. First game. Thanks for getting me back on the track. I almost am like not ready to be on the track. Turingen 76, Llandeil 64. Turingen making it to the finals, being the only team that we didn't mention the name of, really, when we were like, oh, this team might win it. No, you did, to be fair. You just said, I don't know, man, I love Turingen more than I should,
Yeah,
basically.
that was it. And by and large, they proved me right. I mean, the big stuff you talk about, it's funny you talk about those COVID Champions Cups because I think the first Champs Cup autopsy episode we ever did was when Vahid had like 500 points across three games. And
Yeah, we
I
had the
think.
brief moment of like, hey, name players better than Vahid in the last 3 months. And we're like, it's a short list.
And I think he hasn't, is 4 years ago, 3 years ago, he hasn't been the same guy since. And He then came out in the opening game against Llandeil, who I can't remember how many times these two teams have even played each other now, 3 times this season. Who he particularly seems to struggle against now they've gotten bigger with their lineups this year. And he had 26 points and did the bulk of his damage in the kind of closing run. So for people who may not watch this, Llandeil were kind of ahead by 5-ish for most of the first half, stretched it all the way to 10, and then Thuringen scored the last 5 or last 4 points in about 10 seconds to close the first half and get it to within 6. And I do very quick maths looking at the scores here. Thuringen won the second half 46-28 to win the game by 20. Not only was it kind of Vahid takeovery, but he managed to do the takeover stuff while doing a lot of the infuriating borderline soft stuff that has been kind of his downfall in the last few years. Like the number of times he just muscled somebody, got position right under the basket, clean pass, needless little hook shot, and then he was like, "Oh yeah, I don't have to do this," and he just caught a rebound and put it back in. And it's
Yeah, there's
like,
a lot of, I noticed, there's
what?
a lot of finishes that are a bit like stuff that low pointers have to get up
Yeah.
to finish around size. And it's like, I understand, like, Gunther's massive, Mendel's big, Rowe's big. Obviously, like, Tommy and Quinton are long. But it's like, and then when Rose and Yannick are on the floor, like, Rose is big playing as a two and whatever. But it's like, man, you could, like, just go through
just
these
go
guys.
just go
I
up.
wonder if it's like, do low pointers like me and you not understand the plight of being a big in the same way that, like, the equivalent is when a high pointer throws you a pass inside and they're like, "Hey man, like, how did you not finish that or this, that, and the other?" And you're like, "I'm sitting in my chair and like look around and see what this looks like." I wonder if the opposite is true, where we're like, "Hey big fella, you got to just finish through that stuff," and it's like, "No, you don't get beaten up like me." But
Yeah,
yeah, there's a
no, I
lot of
don't
little
know.
like lefty hook shots and finger rolls and stuff, and I'm just like, I don't see why they
Just
need that.
stop with it,
Yeah,
man.
he was 11 from 20 today. 4 from 9 free throws,
Yeah,
26 points. I say today, that day.
I guess the big news for Thuringen generally is they went away from their starting five that they've relied on in more. I mean, they've gradually gotten all their guys back through the course of the season,
Yeah, welcome back, Dris.
apart from Driss, who's literally made his debut this past weekend. And for a minute there, they were undefeated with Driss in their roster.
Yeah,
But
Dris, who came in to join Carlos Bodnjak in a 2-1-5 lineup, which just of all the thinking we do about basketball, that didn't come into our minds at all. Like there was a, okay, Dris is back. Carlos Bodnjak, thank you for your service. You can bump on down the bench. And it was like, oh yeah, they can go two mobile 1-5s, two mids and a big still. Okay, yeah. How did we not think of that?
So yeah, it was. I mean, they started Ari for the extra size, who started both games, didn't have great shooting performances across either of them. Did make one huge shot towards the end of the semi-final. But yeah, they started Ari. Vahid was his back to his vintage self of a few years ago. And that 2-1-5 lineup was actually what stopped the game getting away at just before halftime there, because they Llandeil went with the Rose and Yannick lineup, I think taking Tommy out at that point, maybe to give. In fact, no, sorry, they took Quinton out first, and then the second rotation of that, they took Tommy out. But I mean, the Driss and Carlis on the wings lineup, and then Jordy was the fifth guy, wasn't he, at that point? The Driss and Carlis, they made it really difficult for Rose just because she was getting jumped and sent into a big, and the guy trailing her or like sitting on her right arm as they were kind of doing. Like both Driss and Carlis are legitimately big enough to bother her shooting the ball if they get like a late contest, and that kind of took that element out of it. And yeah, I thought it looked great for Thuringen, considering Hlusky didn't even have a particularly huge game. And
7 from 11 from two, missed the
yeah,
three,
but it,
perfect from free throw. And he was efficient rather than big.
yeah. And then as he always seems to do in proving us right, and I think probably me particularly, when you need it, Joakim Linden's just there. unfailingly and unflinchingly. If we could all age like that guy, both basketball ability wise and looks wise, as that guy is silver foxed out, like you would not believe.
Hey, relax. This is a family show. Let's all. Well, no, to be fair, you say when you need him, like he was minus 12 in the final, 7 from 17.
That
But like.
that's a little bit noisy though, because they'd swapped him for Jordy, and then Halewski hit those two bank threes like in the minute and a half that Linden was out of the game. So
That's fair. Everyone's minus 12 until one of your guys bangs in a couple of threes and you lose by six. Yep, that checks out. Good call.
I just thought it looked much more like Thuringen of the last couple of years than it has done at most points this season. And I think the telltale in this matchup particularly is, although he had a decent game individually, I think when Thuringen ratchet up to defensive pressure, you kind of are reminded that Landale are like classic point guardless, because Tommy's out there doing his thing and running the pick and rolls. But I think it becomes obvious the longer it runs on, the more they pressure him. It's not like the old Landale teams where they have like Tommy out there alongside Serio or Hero or Mikey Pay,
Mikey
who,
back in the day, yeah.
just like moving the ball around. And they almost try and tempt Tommy into being super aggressive, which damn near backfired because he was carrying Landale past them for like 2.5 quarters.
Yeah, it was 23 points. He had a 14, like pretty all right game stats wise. I think the big thing I noticed, and it kind of carried over to the second semi-final as well, was just like the two teams that lost had real trouble playing through how big the team that beat them's defense were. Like Ari, obviously quiet game on the offensive end, like pretty efficient, whatever, but plus 19. There were times where you could see Landale, like Tommy would get jumped early aggressively, they'd get a pick and come off a pick, and there's kind of nothing open, like the windows are a little smaller, and some of it's just like, is the weak side ready, or is the guy in the middle in the right spot, or this, that, and the other? But a lot of it's just like, there were times where you'd see someone come off a pick and they'd go to skip the ball. And there was one, I don't remember who made the pass exactly, but Fahid was just like in between the middle and the weak side, and he just picked the pass off and they ran a layup in. It's like a couple of times happened, like stuff like that happens where it was like, they only had three steals in the game, but there were times where the threat of that kind of a team that moves the ball as well as Landale, there was kind of a like, oh, where do I put this? A height comes from.
If rather than steals or like live turnovers, if there was stat tracking for the number of times in which like an action got started and then kind of stalled and you just had to throw the ball back out and reset, I
Yeah,
think
the
that
amount of pick and rolls that you come off and are still just 5 on 5. But no,
that would
that is a
kind of.
point that I'm going to recycle when we talk about the next game, because it was very apparent at times and in the next game. But I thought that was a real, like, that's a plus on Ari's side, where you can go like Vahid massive, Halewski massive, Ari super long arms, big guy, Joakim Linden massive for a 2-5, and Mari Kier like just not even flying around, just kind of filling the gaps and picking off passes and stuff. And as you say, not even steals, just kind of like coming off the pick and going, All right, cool. Well, we'll run it again. And obviously there was an attempt then maybe to go, all right, do we run this stuff from the 3-point line rather than behind a screen, so there's a bit more space, or this, that, and the other. But I kind of thought they covered all the bases defensively quite well without compromising yourself, because that's all you want to do on offense, isn't it? Like, compromise the defense, get 5 on 4, get 2 on the ball, whatever you want to describe it. But it's like, if you can stop the ball and not really give a whole lot up, which once again, I will just make this point about Albacete in 5 minutes, but like, yeah, unbelievable.
No,
And I
you're
think
right.
that's their roadmap to it. Like, I wonder if they went, right, we're not going to be able to like out. What if we're not going to out Landale, do we just try and go super physical, and going three big with a mid is probably the way you do that, or being able to go two low pointers on the floor, but neither of them being like a physical sort of mismatch. Pretty
Yeah,
impressive.
I thought that was interesting, just because the last point I'll make is Guntner had 19 on 8 of 15 shooting, which is good enough. Mendel, 50% shooting, but only 8 points. And it feels like the balance has been, I've felt like watching Lando this year, the balance of like you would traditionally be like, oh, the biggest guy goes to the basket, the second biggest guy is like maybe more shooting from the elbows or kind of more mid-range focus. I think Landale have usually been the other way around because Gunther is very content shooting like longer baseline mismatches. And I think it's illustrative of the Thuringian defensive intensity that Mendel, who normally gets all the way inside or shoots from close to the basket typically, was not bad offensively by any means, but certainly wasn't getting the opportunities that you've seen Landale be able to carve out by having to make the big guys go out and guard Gunther from greater distance. And yeah, I just thought it was like a, it was, I don't like the saying typically, but this was really like a Thuringian flip the switch. It was very Ilunion style. Oh, we've got a tournament weekend. Let's ramp it up and go flat out for a couple of days. I say Ilunion. Sure, that certainly wasn't the case this weekend. Shall we transition to the next game?
Yeah, do I just go ahead and make the point that I just made about Dering and about Albacete? Because this is, it took me watching this game to be like, oh, that's kind of what happened in the last game as well. Maybe it's me just recycling my talking points. But do you agree with that before I go
Yeah,
on
no,
again? Because
you are right.
there was a couple of plays in this where you could see, like, I don't know, Looney would come down the floor and they'd like pick and roll, can't go inside, move it to the middle. And they'd try and do the like throw it to the middle, keep cutting, get it back. Okay, no, we still can't get to the basket, nor is anyone open, nor am I really open. And it's kind of like some of it was, I was talking to someone about this, and some of it was like scrambling. Like they were pushing around, flying around, and they were just everywhere. But some of it was like being able to be everywhere, which is once again the benefit of just being massive. They went straight up with Charlie, Moore, Lee Manning, Filipski, Ben and Phil, and they just started with that, which we saw them kind of going to early in the first quarter against Landale in the last Champions Cup round. But I think there's a thing where it's like they'd like someone would jump and like guys wouldn't even fully leave their spots. It would just be like the way like guys on able body stuff kind of shade over half a spot and they go, yeah, okay, that window's closed, I'm going back now. But just the combination of mobility and size. I know I've banged on about this for
Yeah.
4 years probably at this point, or 2 years about this iteration of
Wait,
Amiab, but like,
you've banged on about it for so long with Amiab, for literally so long that when we try and get a guest in here to from the winning team to talk about it, we're like, oh, we've actually cycled through everybody on Amiab who speaks English now, so there's nobody new to bring on.
nah, we haven't.
No, we haven't.
But no, there's a it was just like there were times where it's like an Alunian, considering they've been such a force in transition and getting inside off that, where they'll do the thing where they'll go like two guys get a man out, trailer down the middle, following a seal, and like shooters spaced out
Yeah.
because you have to make a choice. There were times where it's like they'd get that level of spacing, and it just kind of felt that Amiab were still able to contest and able to close passing windows down, this, that, and the other. Also, like if you're not getting the production from Hasso, due to lack of production or foul trouble, you're gonna have a hard time. Cause the
Yeah.
whole, I don't know, if you get a guy like Hasso in part to be able to match up with the size and then he doesn't stay on the floor. There's been a couple of big games where he's had the foul trouble, but I don't know. There's probably confirmation bias. I'm sure there's other guys that have had similar foul trouble that I haven't remembered, but
Yeah, no, you are right. I'm gonna lay this game out as simply as I can. So the final score was Amiab 81, Ilunion 56. And from the Amiab side of things, Filipski and Lee had a combined 57 points. So that is one more point between those two guys than Ilunion had as a team. And that was on 25 of 37 shooting.
yeah,
If you
I don't know
need
why I didn't lead with if Filipski goes for 36 on 62% shooting and Lee has 21 with 76% shooting, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah. I thought Ilunia, it was 25-11 after the first quarter. It never really got closer than that. I thought, with what you say about Amiab kind of shrinking the court, I think it's like the old Santa Lucia teams in a lot of ways, where it's like guy comes off the pick ready to either go to basket or like see what the read is. And rather than like sliding doors and trying to find the windows, it's actually like kind of four guys shrink in, and there's three half corridors to the basket, none of which you can do a great deal with. And we saw Ilunion try to get through it by, I think, at some point, second quarter, where Greg had 15 to lead Ilunion, and at one point, second quarter, he had two or three shots in a row where he's like, hey, I'm coming one dribble off this pick, and I'm like turning my chair into it and shooting, like, I'm not
Yeah, he
looking
was
at.
like, "Hey, man, if we're gonna go, we've got to go now, and I'm gonna try and take
Not
it."
even that, I think, but I think he wanted, rather than Amiab shrinking the lanes down, I think he was like, hey, if they're gonna send, like, I'm not gonna let them get away with half help. I'm gonna at least, if not make enough shots, I'm gonna come off aggressively enough that they feel the need to commit someone fully to like coming over and covering. And it worked for a stretch, but they didn't get enough offensively from anyone there. Greg with 15, Amadou with 12, and Pinchot with 10. There's
They drew
obviously.
pretty even, like they drew pretty even. So I mean, actually, even second and third quarter, to be fair, when that was going on. But then just like Amadou came in and kind of contributed and did a little more for them than Tom could in this game, which was. I was like, oh, is this gonna? But after a 25-11 first quarter, that wasn't gonna be enough.
Yeah, no, you're right. And Amiab, you can tell Amiab took it seriously because they, as we'll talk about in the second game of theirs, they assigned the bulk of their minutes to six guys in this one, and there was a couple of chip-ins with like less than 5 minutes. So Amiab got ahead, and they weren't leaving anything to chance. Hence the 24-13 score of the fourth quarter, but. Yeah, I thought, I mean, this has been a talking point for like basically the whole season because obviously Pinchot signed up for Ilunion. He gets his junior point in Spain, doesn't get it in Eurocup. And we even got, when we asked people what their predictions, we got a load of stuff back that was like, oh, Pinchot being a four in Europe rather than a three in the league, might make the difference. And I will be the first to tell those people. Nothing to do with that junior point makes a damn bit of difference in this game because
No.
there is no part of me that believes sub any of those Ilunion guys in and out for each other and do what you can. Amiab were just the better team in this game by any metric you would throw out, and I can't see a path to that not being the case. When Ilunion were clearly as a group just not having their best day slash weekend.
No, 100%. Like, I think. A combination of if Amiab were gonna play like that, you'd be struggling to find anyone who's gonna beat them. And the opposite, when Ilunion are playing like that, you'd struggle to find a way for them to win that game. Like two sides of the coin. But like Amiab offensively, there were so many times where I was like, all right, like Lee's inside. Like they've managed to work something. And like, of course, Phil and Vivi are gonna find him every time. Or, they'd get like Fifi would get a good look without having to sweat too much. And then there were times where they'd kind of, Ilunion would do a good job defensively and they'd manage to like shut a couple of actions down, make them go further and further into their offense. And they'd throw it to Fifi, like stuck right behind a Charlie Moore screen, pretty extended, couple of seconds left. And he'd make it anyway. And it's like, hey, what are you like? You give them a lot of good stuff. And then when you manage to take the good stuff away and force them into a shot that you would like to force a team into, it doesn't matter because they're
Yeah, I mean,
an absolute man. Like,
they're kind of backbreakers in any sense, but I think realistically, the end score is not close enough that Ilunion can be like, oh man, if they just hadn't hit a couple of those, we might have been like, if we were talking about a 7 or 8 point win here. And you're like, I can't believe they scored even when we played good defense for 23 seconds. Like, I think that's the point at which you can be like, man, we were actually right there with them, but not the case. 25 point. margin.
Now, it's very rarely the case that the tough shots that you weren't able to stop, even though you played great defense, are the reason you lost a game. Most of the time, it's like, hey, if we forced 20 more of those instead of some of the easier looks we gave them, it might have tipped the scales, but like you don't.
I feel like we're dipping back into into last week's episode where we talked extensively about your game against Fenerbahce.
Are we?
That is very similar to what that sounded like.
Ah, Christ. I didn't know I sounded as depressed this week. But yeah, Filipski, man. Like, there's a wider conversation to be had about like where Filipski is in like the all-timers list at this point from the weekend he's had. But
Do you know what number Champions Cup victory this is for him?
is it six?
This is six, yeah. And
Wow. Good job, us.
I'm not 100% sure on this. I may well be wrong. If anyone who's listening knows otherwise, then feel free to let me know. But I think because Amiab have been in the final so many years in a row, I think since Filipski's been there, which is his third year with them, they've not done a qualifying round for Champs Cup. They've just done semi-finals and then Final Four. I don't think they have lost a Champions Cup game in the 3 years that Filipski's been with them. I don't think so. That's like what, five games a year? So I think they're 15-0 in Champions Cup games with Filipski on the team, which
Oh, maybe.
that deserves another cup in itself. I think you're getting the point if you're racking those up.
Yeah, I have no idea. Also, me and some of my teammates a while ago were trying to think about who had the most Champions Cups ever, and I think we landed on like Dirk Kohler might have like six. Is I think where we landed. So is Fifi near the top of the list for most Champions Cups ever? I know he's near the top of the list, but
Yeah,
he's.
definitely.
I don't know if he's tied. I don't think there was an official record of it. We were just kind of supposing that Dirk Kohler was kind of in a handful of the Landil iterations that won a couple in a row. So, but yeah, like
I think
Fifi, three in a row, Lee, three in a row, Ben, three in a row.
I think Alejandro is probably on six as well because
He's at least three.
he has three with Amiab now. I think he had two with Alunian before, and I think he may have had one in his Galatasaray year, but I might be wrong.
I always forget he went to Galatasaray. That's mad.
Yeah.
I say that's mad. No, it's not. He's one of the best big threes in the world for the last decade, so it makes sense that he'd go there. But
Do we have anything else on this game, or was this a formality at this point?
yeah, no, I just wanted to like go Filipski and Lee's greatness rather than Alunian looking like they were a bit sort of short of the usual sort of ideas that they have. But
Well,
I once
if you
again, a lot of that is credit to Albacete, like Alunian kind of offensively come against whoever they want and do whatever they want for 30 something out of 40 minutes a game. And then, you know, I'm always like, I'm team give guys credit rather than the other way around. But like, yeah, it was a lot of
well, I'll
Albacete being built in a way that they could take away stuff that no one else really can is the one.
I'll let you decide who you want to give credit to as we move on to the next game, and because you can either give credit to Landil for winning third place, or you can give Ilunion credit for bouncing back. And rather than losing by 25 as they did in their semi-final, they lost the bronze game by 24. So nobody can say they're not making progress.
Yeah, growth mindset is not what it's called. No, that's tough. We kind of spoke about this with, oh my God, I've saying this. We've done a load of podcasts recently. We've done a load of podcasts for the last however many years, but a lot of the times it's like who's got it together the first game of the day on a Sunday. But then I think your reply was like, I don't know, like you should probably have it together for a Champions Cup Final Four game, whether it's the bronze medal or the final. But
Well, I don't even think it's that, but I think as a jet, I understand the malaise of, especially if you've had. I mean, we saw it with a couple of them in the Euro Cups last weekend, where it was like a really close semi-final that then left one team heartbroken going into the bronze game. I just think, as a general rule, I don't like the idea of anybody thinking they're better or that they're not gonna like give the bronze medal game their all because they're somehow above it,
I
because
don't think that's not what I'm implying. I'm implying like a just a like an unintentional like just being so sad about it that you can't get up for the next game rather than not wanting to.
No, I think that's part of it. I think that does happen, but I don't know. I struggle to have too much sympathy as a human being generally, I suppose. So maybe this is unsurprising, but I just I feel like, hey, if you don't want to be in the bronze game, the gold game is right there. And if you've not made that, the best thing you can do is win bronze. And it really is that simple. And if you are looking at this and you can't get your mind together for it because you're upset about the result from the previous day. Number one, being third in Europe is still an accomplishment. And number two, this is a game. And if you're going to take it that seriously, then you should just want to win anyway. Like, if you're going to be like, hey, there's no, I have to take this seriously. I can't say this is just a game where you throw a ball in a hole. It's like, okay, well, go and win the game in front of you then. So that I don't see an escape of the like, maybe you just can't get up for a thing. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But
Okay, was an escape. Rose was very efficient. Tommy was very efficient. Was it Landale shooting 60%? It's gonna be hard to come by.
yes.
This was a game. I was just disappointed because this was a game that I kind of wanted to see, and I think it might have been more competitive if it were a final rather than a bronze medal game. But like, this was a game that I thought could have been interesting. And I don't know, gun to your head, if you thought this game was going to be 89-65 a month ago, would you have said Tolandil or Alunian?
Well, I think just over a month ago, Landil was still undefeated,
Yeah.
because they only lost the game to Amiab, didn't they? So, I don't think I would have just flipped a coin for who I thought this was if you
Yeah,
told
you
me
would have
that.
been like, no, it won't. Shut
Yeah.
up.
Or I would have been like, well, I'd need to know who's missing the game with injuries and whatever. I thought this felt a lot like you talked about, who can get up from what. I thought Landil really bounced back with a lot more fury. I think if, I don't love getting into the psychology of it, but I think Landil losing the only time they've lost to Thuringen this year, whose number they've had, they played very much like they were extremely unhappy about how the previous game had gone, and like they channeled it in the best possible way, which is a skill in and of itself, but they looked like they were really out to correct their mistakes from the previous game more so. And I mean that stylistically rather than like, hey, we're gonna get our revenge or anything naff like that. So yeah, I thought they just really took the lessons learned and they defended with quite honestly a level of intensity, and they scored well enough that had we gotten that version of Landil against Thuringen, they probably, I mean, they scored 64 against Thuringen, 89 against Alunian, right? So all you have to do is fall somewhere in the middle of that, and they probably would have edged Thuringen by a point or two. It's obviously very different opponents, but yeah, I just thought they looked way more up for it, or at least way more like they were able to channel the negatives of the loss in a positive way. And yeah, Illunion just didn't have anything obviously going for them. Like, Illunion have always been bigger than Landil when they've played in the last couple of years. And they just looked like they weren't able to get a huge amount out of the Hasso and Bill unit together. I thought those guys both, they're 16 and 13 respectively, but the minutes where they shared weren't giving them any obvious advantage.
Yeah.
And yeah, drop off from Greg's production from six. He had 15 in the first game to six in the second game. And yeah, they just, for whatever reason, they weren't able to put up enough points to hang, and certainly weren't able to get anything like enough stops. Rose came off the
Yeah.
bench and had a great game, which she see If Rose only played against like the top handful of teams in Europe, I think she would average more points than she averages throughout the course of the season. She seems to have 20 every time Landell plays someone that they're really up for.
But on
But
like nine shots
yeah, it's insane.
somehow,
But yeah,
mathematically.
I'd thought Landell played really well, man, and it's a tough look to have your best game in the second game when your fate's already, pre-decided to a certain extent, but I thought that they made the most of the scenario. And at the very least, we're obviously Germany's going back into their season, and they've got their playoff game tipping tomorrow, I think. By the time we release this, it'll be today. They're taking Hanover on, and I think at least they're coming out of Champions Cup on a positive, because I think this was one of their best performances against a good team all season.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never really thought about that, but if you have a playoff game on the Thursday after your Champions Cup, it's like, right, let's get something out of this. Like,
Sure. I guess we're not going to talk about it again as we move on to the final, but where does this leave Ilunion? Because they've looked, for the bulk of the season, they've looked every bit up there and ready to rival Albacete, and have beaten Albacete a couple of times. Looked way off in these two games, and you can't even really do the thing where it's like, oh, we just got a tough crossover and then a bad matchup, because I think if you go back to the semi-final round, they lost to Thuringen in that one as well. So that plants them by the results as fairly comfortably fourth in Europe, granted that these four, nobody's going to be disrupting the top four anytime soon, because every time we think someone is, it defaults
Yeah,
back to
and
the
the couple of teams
semi-final.
that we're like, oh, they might be an extra playing like Euro Cup too. So a couple of years, yeah. But no, I Bilbao next year. No, I think it's an interesting one because like we'd spoken about it where like this Champions Cup semi-final between Alunian and Albacete looked more like the league game that Albacete won by 20 than either of the cup games, obviously, and I don't know what the difference is, but I think for Albacete, there's probably, I don't know if there was much of a thing, but like having beaten, knowing you can beat a team like that by 20, but like having lost the two finals you've played against them, there was probably a bit of a like a hump to get over there. And now that they've done it in a, and that's not a real thing, but now that they've like done it in the cup, there's probably like a, all right, yeah, no, we're
Well,
good.
if we were feeling, and I don't want to do this in a way that discredits any of the wins that Alunion have had against Amiab, but as we may be seeing with the two teams that made the final, we talked obviously about Thuringia's lineup change, but Amiab obviously went with their four bigs unit, which they've not really played a huge amount of this season. And if I was feeling like exploring why they lost those earlier games to Ilunion, I would at least pull at the thread of saying, well, have they actually just known that they've got their best lineup ready to go all season, and they've taken until Champions Cup Final Four to really just roll it out and commit huge minutes to it? I don't know why they
You
would.
mean like saving it or not realizing that they have it? Because I don't think either of those are, I don't buy either of those really.
I think probably neither, but I think has push come to shove, and they've got two games to win it all, and have they assessed their options and gone, actually, we think we trust this one more, and they kind of haven't realized that up until this point in the year.
I think stylistically, like we talked about the Copa del Rey final a couple of months ago, and I think one of the things that stuck out immediately was like Albacete's press was broken relatively well by Ilunion early game, and then it was like, all right, so maybe that's not a thing that we have in the locker, and it's they were able to go somewhere differently. Whereas like Albacete didn't seem bothered by Ilunion's press, even with their four big, a whole lot. But I don't know, does Ilunion's plan B then bother Albacete? I don't know. It's an interesting one where it's basically like that last game was like two press lineups and Ilunion seemed pretty comfortable with it, and that's probably where I thought the wins came from, but in part anyway. But then it's like, if that's not the case, if Valunion, if Albacete just go right four big constantly, what are you going to do? Do you try and match up with it? And in that case, are you taken away from your identity? It's a thing of like, if a team does goes a certain way, do you match up, or do you go in the opposite direction of it? And I don't know how much I love either of those, but also like, you come out again and you don't throw the ball all over the place and whatever at the start of your at the start of the first quarter, you might be fine. Like, there was a time where it's like Albacete come out super well, and then Alunian get a couple of shots to go, and then Pinto like loses a dribble and turns the ball over, and it's like little bits and pieces like that where you're like, ah, I don't know. Like, can you do you like do you believe the second and the third quarter are actually what it's more like, or was that an aberration? I don't know. I'm so excited to find out, and they have to play each other again in the league before they potentially cross over in Final Four. I nearly just said before they cross over in Final Four. Like, it'll be interesting. I'm actually kind of excited that they get to play each other again before maybe meeting in Final Four, because I don't know. I want to watch these
Especially.
guys. I want to watch these guys like figure each other out. Like, I want to see what Ilunion's next idea is, and I also want to see if it matters if Lee's pushing the way he's pushing and finishing the way he's finishing, and if Fifi's just not gonna miss. Like,
Yeah, especially the game that those two were meant to play each other already that got cancelled was that actually like the day we, do you remember when we had Pincho on here after the Copa del Rey, and he was like, I can give you guys half an hour because then I have to go for getting on the bus to go to Albacete, and then the game got cancelled. So Pincho still owes us half an interview, I think. Shall we move on to the final?
yes. All right. So let's move on. And when I say let's move on, I mean let's find the right tab. This was Amiab 70, Thuringia 64, and it didn't seem like a 6-point game because Heluski banks in two threes near the end that make it look a little closer than it was after having 6 points all game.
Well, let's not get too simplistic
Well, no, I wasn't just gonna go full stop. All right, thanks very much for
that
listening,
one
guys.
because
But what I was gonna say is, I don't know, it seemed like ropey and quite tight, but I don't know. Was there a point where you were like, oh, Turrigan, maybe,
yeah,
maybe?
there was. There
Oh,
was.
okay.
It was. We'll have to go through the various patterns of everything that happened to get us to this point, but it went from it was tied at halftime. Bizarrely, Thuringen, who we just mentioned, had been down 10 and then had a 4-point run in the last two possessions to close it to six when they played Landil. They were up four. Sorry, no, up three on Amiab with about 12 seconds left when they fouled Phil. He hit one out of two free throws, and then Binet called a timeout for Thuringen to get the ball. Like, we're going to inbound from our own end line, so we're going to go pass into the front court.
Turnover, I called it.
And it was like suicidal. Jens tried to go from his own end line hook pass into the front court that was in the air for like approximately 83 seconds. And
Against one of the biggest, most mobile
yeah,
teams, of the biggest, most mobile team in Europe. I literally, like,
it
I called in the timeout when because I think you could hear him or see something that would
looked,
imply that it was going to go full court. And I was watching it in Jim Avin Daniel's house, and I was like, this is a turnover. I'm calling it, or steal.
and in Binek's defense, it did then go pass layup, but not for the team he was advising to do so. So it got to. It got to 30 all at halftime. And then, by the way, that was after the first quarter had been 10-8 for Amiab and
An
Thuringen.
absolute rock fight of
I
a
was
first
like, yo,
quarter.
if this is going to be, both teams struggling to get out of single figures in 10-minute spans, I think that really favors Thuringen.
Oh yeah, that was the roadmap to this game was 64 points being enough. Like,
It was then 22-20 in the second quarter, throwing with a 2-point advantage. Like I say, they had been up more. Amiab got ahead kind of late third into early fourth, and they were up by 10 and Halewski, that Thuring brought their subs back in because Halewski had been out because for whatever reason he was the 4-5. They were subbing out in the first rotation of subs in each half, and they were leaving Vahid in with like the press lineup. But Halewski came in, bank three, wild shot that went high off the backboard, like inside front of the ring, back onto the backboard, and then dropped through.
Oh, that
And
did not look like it was going to stay in, did it?
He then rolled down and shot another bank three from the wing, which was sheer insanity. I think from then he was feeling it. He came down the next possession, hit like a bank shot fadeaway. Amiab got a score. Ari got a score. I think Thuring got a stop. And then it was a dump inside to Mari Kier,
Yeah,
who.
who, by the way, her and Charlie Moore were both 2 for 2 each at that point, which I was like, hell yeah. Like, shout out to the female ones finishing everything they were given all game.
That was one thing I had noted down to mention it. Exemplary female low point role playing in this game on both sides. And yeah, Marie hit the layup with Lee trying to contest late, fouled her, and that got it to 2 with a Thuringen free throw to come. And I feel like there was like so much yelling by the Spanish commentators in stereotypical fashion that it maybe got like looked past. But her free throw came off and straight into Halewski's hands. And I think he had Ben on him at that point. And he was like mid-shot attempt by the time they called the free throw invalid because it had just hit off the board and not the ring.
Yeah, I was
So,
gonna say like
yeah.
that. I the way you described it, I was like, wait, did she not airball it? I
She hit the backboard and it went into Halewski's hands. So had that even clipped the ring or whatever, and that bounce had come off the same, Halewski may have tied the game up at that point with about 4 minutes left.
Yeah, potentially.
As it was, Thuringer never got the game back to tied, and then it was a matter of the free throw game and whatever. And I think Filipski had done enough to spook Thuringen that on their defense, they were like pre-jumping him towards the end of the game and trying to get out there before he caught the ball.
Yeah.
And there was two or three possessions in a row where they thought the ball was on the way to him, jumped early, and then he got like a cut inside and a short post up with like Jens or Jordi Ruiz on him. And I think Filipski may have had like 8 of Amiab's last 10 points or something, because it was two or three of those cuts and then some free throws. And yeah, I thought it was weird. He basically put them away by doing the kind of little short mid-range mismatch stuff, which hasn't really been his game since maybe like his Burgos days, where he was having to do everything. He's kind of become, he may be the most I take the shots I'm comfortable with elite guy playing anywhere in the world at the moment. I thought it was cool to watch him be like, hey, I'll just shoot over guys if the going gets tough.
Yeah, like the thing of like, I always say it, where it's like with shot creation, you can either like put guys in the floor that get you good shots, or you can put guys in the floor that will make the bad ones. And he had like a steady diet of both all weekend, where it's like if you're playing with the spacing that Lee and Ben and Charlie going inside gives you, and you're playing with the sort of playmaking that Phil has in buckets, there's like a real expectation that Filipski could play 40 minutes and just get good looks. But obviously against a team that at this level, Champions Cup final, and Thuringen, who play as hard and they're as physical as they are, there's going to be some like weird post-ups against mid-pointers, and Fifi's just like, yeah, all right, whatever, cool. It's just so impressive shot making, like.
That was true on both sides as well, because although I thought Amiab kept Halewski very uncomfortable for a lot of the game, combined with we get on Vahid a lot on here. Halewski, a little bit more quietly, isn't always there when push comes to shove, but he
No, no. For sure.
obviously saved his case a little bit with dragging them back into the game single-handedly. But there was like stretches in the second quarter where Jordi Ruiz did what he normally does. He didn't do it against Landale this time because he didn't really have to, but it's felt like every time the goings got tough against Landale this year for Thuringen, Jordi's had one usually second quarter run where he's like, hey, I'll just haul us back into it and we'll see if we can take it from there.
Yeah, Jordy will always give it a swing in a game like this, which I respect. Like, there was a him like pushing into a mismatch over Charlie on the
Yeah, that was the one
elbow,
I was gonna
like
mention.
as if it was like standard early offense, as if he were a 4 or 5. Was he made it like great,
Yeah.
great. I respect it. I respect him having shot that enough that he like caught it, took half a pullback, and like swished it as if it was something he'd done in training, because I'm sure it is. But you know what I mean? Like you could tell if that was a guy being like, oh man, right, this is what we're gonna have to go to. But he like took two pushes towards her, stopped his chair, called for it outside hand, like
Yeah.
quarter turn to get his shoulder square and a bit of distance, and then splashed it. So like, oh man, this guy works on this. Like, what are we doing? This is unbelievable. But they're just like, overall, he wasn't efficient enough for it to
Right.
matter. But like,
So
I also, there was a couple of runaway layups that he had that I was like, oh, if you get a couple more of these. But I don't know.
yeah,
It was interesting.
I thought the Bulls bench did well. They got what 23 points from their four guys who got real minutes off the bench. If we want a real look at how close this one actually was, so Thuringen 29 from 63, 46%, 27 from 54 two pointers, and 2 from 9 threes. Amiab, if we do the same numbers, 29 from 62, also 46%, 28 from 56, 2 pointers, 1 from 6 threes. The difference in the game, in a 6 point game, Amiab 11 from 20 free throws, where Thuringen were 4 from 9. So that's 7 point difference in a 6 point game,
Yeah,
on free
that's
throw.
is this the LA Lakers thing where everyone's like, oh man, they get way more whistles? You're like, no, they go inside more than everyone. I think that's more true about Albacete than it is about the Lakers. I think the Lakers do get a nice whistle sometimes. I think Amiab are just inside more than everyone.
Yeah, they
And it's
are.
like when you have a guy with the ball in his hands like Phil, where it's like, if you're inside and there is a basketball shaped window for him to find you, he will find you. Like, there's times where it's like, oh, you're kind of like, they've kind of sagged off this person or that person because there's someone inside, and he's like, that's a layup. Like, I will throw it to this guy. It'll be on the money and he will finish.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I guess bearing in mind that a lot of at least I think six of those free throws were as Thuringen were chasing the game with a minute or so left. But I also think Amiab went like 5 from 6 in that stretch. So yeah, obviously you can say it got artificially inflated in that last minute or so there, but that's also part of the game. And those points are as crucial, if not more crucial, than anything that has come before that. So
Yeah, if they
if
went
we
5 from 6, they
pat
wouldn't have looked great at the end of the game if they didn't make those free throws. So
if you if you are saying, oh, well, they get more free throws than us, it's like, well, they weren't manically pushing around trying to foul you because you were ahead. So
yeah.
that's why they got more free throws. Yeah, I thought Amiab were. I thought as the momentum was swinging second quarter and those runaway layups, I got the feeling Amiab were potentially feeling the pressure, which I definitely think they were in stretches.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I just think, similar to what we believed to be the case with the NBA playoffs up until this Monday night that just saw Denver go down 0-2, it always kind of feels like the best safe bet is the team with the best half court offense will probably, the long game will favor them one way or another. And that certainly proved to be true of Amiab, who are a phenomenal transition team in their own right. But I think where Thuringen were able to match their transition game, they weren't able to match their half court execution. And yeah, that I thought that was particularly impressive, Amiab, given that we just watched Thuringen stranglehold Landale's half court offense for the second half of the previous game. And yeah, it was basically everything we've seen from Amiab all year, where it just. Maybe we're conditioned to favor offense a little bit, but
I
when these
think
games are close, you kind of feel like this team's just gonna score. Like
I do think offense is ultimately, well, in as an individual player, I think the most valuable skill in wheelchair basketball is like creating scoring opportunities for yourself and others.
yeah.
Like, I do think like perfect offense beats perfect defense.
Yeah, it does.
So I don't think it's unfair to value that where it's like, hey man, these guys, we've just talked about what they were able to do to their the teams they played against in the semifinals, and then when it came to it, it's like, hey, do you have a guy like Fifi to really put it together when it matters? Do you have Lee inside when it matters? Do you have Phil finding those guys? Like,
By the way, you say Phil finding those guys. Phil had 19 assists in both games. We shouldn't have taken this long to mention,
yeah,
but
my God. I feel like every so often there's like when someone goes as nuts as Fifi, you kind of talk about that and you take for granted that it's like, hey, Lee just kind of did whatever he wanted inside, and Phil had 19 assists. Phil had 38 assists in a
in
week.
2 games, yeah.
What are we doing here? Unbelievable. Well, obviously, but also it's just like I've been lucky enough to just be around those guys and like almost take their unbelievable stuff for granted. Like, which is not fair considering I come on here and talk about it. But yeah, just absolutely unbelievable stuff. Just like in a perfect spot for all of those guys, like those three in particular work off each other. And then you've got like Charlie Murray and Ben doing the sort of the work that goes a little bit unseen, especially Ben, who can like in a given game for these guys has had like 20 something a fair few times this season and last because he's had to. And then for it to be like, hey man, this one might be a little tougher for you, but like we need that work.
Well,
Unbelievable.
Ben was what, 4 from 12 for the game, so by a
Of
long
plus
way,
11.
yeah, by a long way, not his most efficient scoring game, but played 33-ish minutes. Alejandro was the only guy to come in for Amiab. Didn't give them a great deal of anything. And yeah, they stuck with Ben even though he had some. I mean, it's tough for him as a smaller inside big, especially against. He's not a smaller inside big against a lot of teams, but he certainly feels it when he's going in against Halluski and Vahid. And yeah, they stuck with it, which I think a lot of teams probably would have at least attempted a sub here and there, like a not a 1-for-1 sub, like a stylistic sub. But I mean, I've stuck with it. They went with six guys, and it was enough to get them there. Probably the right call, you would say. But I think the question at this point becomes, this is three in a row for Albacete, and they have managed to do this. They've obviously changed a little bit since they had like Gaz and Kyle there for their first one. Phil's come in and whatever for the last two, Charlie as well. Not a huge amount of contribution from the additions from the most recent offseason, but I think the question is going to become as this goes on. Given that we see the same final four more or less every time, what are any of these other three teams going to have to do? I mean, do we believe they're going to closest? I would be inclined to say yes, because I think Landil are more likely to look different next year than Thuringia are, for better or worse. And it doesn't feel, short of signing one of the guys away from Albacete to disrupt their group, it doesn't feel like there is a guy who's going to be on the market that one of these teams can just pick up and slot in and level the playing field.
Yeah, like who's closest to getting closer to that balance of like chair skills, size, and shooting? Who's able to put lineups on the floor that tick all the boxes? And like all four of the teams that are here do in a certain way. Like all four of these teams have lineups that are like quick and can shoot the ball and have size on the floor. Like there's a lot of three, four bigs being on the floor at the same time. That's just what high level club wheelchair basketball is at this point, but like, I don't know, it'll be interesting. I think this will be at the end of the sort of break over the summer when everyone's kind of retooled. It'll be interesting to see if we think anyone's got close to it, but I don't know. I don't know concretely what the other three teams are adding to like actually see how much of a difference it might make or if anyone's leaving Amiab, but. Do you think it's more likely that, like, and I don't mean probability that it would happen, but do you think it would move the needle more like a guy leaving Amiab than anyone in the world joining any of these other teams? Because I think that might be
Yeah, short
Depends
of.
who, obviously, but like.
Yeah. I mean, short of some infusion of talent of guys who aren't in Europe currently, I think you would have to plunder from the market of like Japan or maybe the States or Canada or whatever else. Because I think I don't see anybody who's going to become available on the European club scene who is just a natural fit into this level's one of Illunion, Thuringen, or Landil up. Short of, I don't know, let's pick somebody. Let's say John Hernandez turns up and is available, and one of those teams can grab him in a way that gives them a dimension they don't currently have.
Yeah, you get quicker and bigger at the same time eventually. Yeah, like
But
I can see
that
it.
you're fishing in a very shallow pool at that point if you need an addition of one guy who's gonna maintain your size and your speed and give you a balance of inside and outside scoring. It's like that might be a list of the fact I said John Hernandez there and can't think of a second guy for that list kind of tells you what margins we're treading here.
Oh, there are guys that would shift the needle, but it's just like, are any of the guys going to be on one of these three teams next year?
I mean, if someone
And also,
wants.
would it matter, like, if you just like plucked someone out of thin air and put them on one of these three teams, would you pick Amiab to repeat anyway?
Well, I
This
think
is
that
all hypothetical. I'd love to talk about this next year rather than now, but.
I mean, I've certainly earned the benefit of the doubt at this point, but as I referenced the Nuggets earlier, man, you see how sometimes you look completely like champions until you then don't. So nothing is impossible, but yeah, short of one of these teams finally luring like Renchi Chokai over or whatever, I don't see anybody's ceiling shifting dramatically. But
Yeah, I really thought that was going to happen a couple of years ago, post Tokyo. I don't really see it,
yeah,
considering
yeah.
he hasn't made the move yet. Also, I'm not massively sure that gets it done. Like,
Well, it would certainly give a. I mean, if you're claiming any of those teams have a guy who bring the equivalent package to what he does, then I'm tempted to tell you you're wrong. But
yeah, that's fair. That combo of like size now, the way he's sitting and speed, maybe not. Yeah.
But yeah, it's. I mean, I think it would have to be. Put it this way, I think probably the best bet of beating Amiab would be two of these clubs to like fuse and pick the best of both of their rosters. That seems like the most concrete path, but is also an absurd suggestion.
Also, Illunion have beaten them twice this year, so they're not absolutely just bulletproof, but like,
No, they're not, but this has been them playing at their peak when it's mattered, and that
yeah,
has been
that's true.
true of the last three Champions Cups, I think.
Oh
So
yeah, 100%. I was actually, I was trying to find that first Champions Cup that they beat Thuringen in the final. I was actually trying to find video for that a couple of days ago, but like very quickly, do you happen to remember where it was?
No, I don't actually. Was one of them in Poland? Did I make that? That's probably
No,
yeah, no. That oh, that
I
was
think there
a
was just two in a row in Turrigan, and then
yeah. No, I don't happen to remember.
that's fine. No worries.
I guess the only other question is, as I call to happen this year, do Galatasaray crack the top four? Which they might do because they've always got the budget, but also we said that that was going to be the case this year, and they. Not only did they get knocked out of Europe, they haven't even made the Turkish League finals. So, not putting my money on them
It's
again.
not as bad as like your Burgos call, but it wasn't. This also wasn't
Yeah.
correct. This was far more logically sound. I was like, hey, this team might make a swing for it because they have won several of them. But yeah, that wasn't great.
Well, Euro Cup's over for another year, man.
Wait, yes, it
It's.
is.
Wild things.
Belt, Fifi,
Fifi.
done.
It's
Yeah.
bet anyone wants to come and debate, it won't make for a long episode.
Yeah,
Fifi.
Phil's 19 assists a game get a mention. Lee's presence inside get a mention. But like, I love how it's just like the top three contributors statistically to the team that looked sort of head and shoulders above everyone. It's not really that exciting. The real
So
belt winner was
sometimes.
the friends we made along the way.
Right, let's get out of here before you get soppy again.
All right. Thanks very much for listening. God knows what this was, and God knows what we'll have for you next week. If you meet him, ask him for us. All right. Talk to you later. Have a good week. Bye.
Peace.